You're listening to The Startup with Monique LeRae, only on LA Talk Radio.
Los Angeles, it's The Startup with Monique LeRae, and I'm Monique LeRae, still at home. Hopefully soon we'll be back in the studio and you won't be distracted with all my fabulous projects behind me. It's a little cold today at the beach, so I've got the fireplace on. How are you guys doing? Today we have a power-packed show. We have someone that you should recognize right away. He's a worldwide celebrity now, and an amazing chef, Chef Cody from Hell's Kitchen Season 19. How's it going?
What's going on?
What's going on? How are you?
I'm amazing. That intro is serious. It's like I thought a Transformer movie was about to start.
No, right? Well, you know what? You really are a star, and I know that the audiences just fell in love with your charming and sweet. You're talented and supportive. What a team player! I was really blown away with your level of support. I mean, intro yourself in case people don't know who you are.
Yeah, hi. My name's Cody Candelario. I'm a little chef from Northern California who's just trying to make a lot of noise. I was on a show called Hell's Kitchen where I have a pretty interesting character, which we'll get into, I'm sure, on the show. But yeah, I just like to do a good job and be honest and have a fun time.
Well, I love that. And so you're a NorCal guy, so that makes total sense. Your style and swagger. I mean, give us a sample if anyone's never been to NorCal, how would you describe it and maybe your culinary style?
Yeah, well, so Northern California is my center of the universe. And so I haven't lived there in about like coming on 11 years. I'm a little traveler, but it's always been home. It's the center of my ecosystem, center of my universe. That's where, and it's just like really great people, amazing food. And it's not hard to find that everywhere, but it's consistent there. You know, you can't go anywhere without people like waving to you and stuff like that. It's just, you know, people are nice. It's great music and stuff like that. But what's funny on the show is that they're always like, because I was living in LA at the time, I'd been there for 3 years, and I was like, I was living in Sherman Oaks, and they always be like, young man, Gordon would be like, young man, you're a smart lad. You're from LA. I'm like, no, I'm actually from, and then just go to the next person. And I'm like, wait, no, come back. So yeah, I'm from a little town called Healdsburg. It's right. An hour north of San Francisco.
That's right. You know, and the Bay is a different vibe. I mean, listen, California, we have a lot of different vibes, but it's really important if you've never been here to understand that there is a shift in culinary and arts and the overall Bay Area scene. What stood out to me about the Bay Area, specifically when I was up there, is the infusions and the cuisines, the kind of hybrid cuisines. There's a lot of Asian influence there. What did you recognize there? Yeah. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, so it's not necessarily, because, I mean, especially in LA, you have the hyper example of like what culture can do. It's like you can get anything at any time in LA. What really drew me to Northern California was there's literally just farms surrounding all of it. And so it's just super easy to be agrarian. I grew up like seeing like farmers markets all the time and stuff like that. And just having like where I'm coming, I forget what the term is, but it's basically like something to allude to hyper local, where it's not just they're listing the farms on their menu and nothing comes in, you know, farther from 20 miles, but they'll list where they get their plates from. You know what I mean? It's like that type of thing where it's like,
farm to table.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, but it seems silly to say it because everyone says that stuff, but that's literally bigger than that. It's almost like agrarian. Like, it's that kind of a farm-like society. So that was like a big thing for me. It was just like, oh, seeing where food comes from. And it's always been like a hella important reminder, because the further away you go from farms, it's like so easy to just buy stuff in packages and not trying to look for that. But that's always been really important for me.
That's actually a really great point, and I didn't realize until now. You've got Kern County, Bakersfield, you could go up to Napa. All of that is, you know, where the food and the wine come from.
Well, in a lot of LA restaurants, you know, you'll see in some major places, like a lot of this stuff, like you'll see names like Sonoma, Petaluma. Like, you'll see a lot of these farms that they're getting their stuff from Northern California.
That's right. All right, so Cody, I want to know your story. I really want to know, like, you know, when you knew that you were going to be a chef, like when you had that aha moment of, oh, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do it my way. Can you share with the viewers when that was?
Absolutely. It wasn't more like aha, it was more like, oh fuck. Part of my head.
I love that. Even
though I left home when I was 17, and I started cooking when I was, like, the first time I did was when I was 8. I cooked for my mom on Mother's Day. I had some political differences, let's say the least, you know, creative differences as a kid growing up with, you know, parents and stuff like that. And I wanted to work and do what I wanted to do. And there was just like this divide. So I left home when I was 17 and love my parents, have a great relationship with them now. But I was just like, I needed to do this. And so I left home and I was like, all right, okay. I make music and I cook. You know, I got my first job in, you know, as a dishwasher and a cashier and a prep cook when I was 13. And so at that point I was a terrible employee, but I was really interested in being good at something and learning. And so when I left home at 17, it was like, all right, what are you gonna do to make money? And I was like, one thing I don't want to do is be a broke anything. I'm a creative. I can find passion in anything that is in creativity. So I'm going to get good at cooking. And so I just jumped into it from there. And I like applied to a really amazing resort complex or resort chain that I was a fan of called Aman, that was opening up a new place in Canyon Point, Utah, that ended up being the number one resort in America for a couple of years. And so I just ended up being a line cook there when I was 18 for a couple of years. And it just changed my life. I was like, it's really hard. And I almost quit a few times, many times in my career, I almost quit. Where I'm just like crying in the walk-in when no one's around. We're like, I don't know if I could do this, but I kept going back to it. And it just has always been an easy work hard equals result. So that's kind of the intro, but I'm so tangential. So many stories. That's the short version.
I love that. And you know, I like what you said at the beginning of that. You prefaced it by, listen, I can learn and I can and go through the steps, but I don't want to be broke anything. So I'm going to do something and make my money. You set kind of a boundary of a standard for yourself. And I think that could be translated to anything. You can just work and see the result.
You know, it's important to me that I always try to, like, you know, from a point of education, I always try to, like, not in a mean way, but a lot of people will throw words around and be like, you're so talented, you're so lucky, you're so fortunate you found your passion. And I'm like, I appreciate what you're trying to say, but fundamentally, I wasn't great at anything. I sucked at everything. And I tried really hard and failed so many times to get good at one thing. And, you know, this is 12 years in the making. And so people, I always try to remind people, like, this isn't something ethereal. I wasn't given anything. I sucked at everything. Anybody can do this. Like, if you want something, just work until, you know, I always say, do it right until you can do it well.
That's a beautiful, are you going to get, we got to get t-shirts with them on there.
I'm working on some stuff. Yeah, do it right.
We're debuting that here on the startup. We love it.
I got a bunch of sayings like that.
Beautiful. So Cody, you know, your fans want to know, I know they want to know this, you know, when you got the call, you know, let's start before you got the call. When you got the opportunity presented itself to you to try out to put your name in the hat for Hell's Kitchen. How did that come about? And do you remember the steps and do you remember what it felt like? Because, you know, entrepreneurs were always tuned into what it feels like and how we're going and signs. And walk us through that process of how you felt that you knew, all right, I'm getting there. I'm on the next level here and I'm going to get the call. Or maybe that wasn't the experience.
I mean, I lead with confidence. I think that people are so much more powerful than they give credit. And when it's like a switch that I can throw on where it's like, overfeel yourself, give yourself everything that you need to be, you know, everything and anything. And so when I got the initial email, that's when I knew. I was like, I'm probably going to go do this. And it was great. I was having it. So my really like amazing, amazing chef friend, Sandy Ho, who is the chef of Sandita's, a pop-up in LA, which everyone should check out. She's really amazing. She and I, she brought me onto it, but she and I were doing this amazing project for Adidas at the time where it was this thing called the Creator Camp, where they locked, like, you know, around 100 different artists for 7 days in a giant mansion with a bunch of recording studios. And we're like, hey, make a bunch of music. And we did the food for that. Yeah. It was really crazy. Life-changing experience. I got the email in the middle of that. So I was already on a crazy high. You know what I mean? I was already in such a great vibe and stuff like that. Music is a home for me, as I mentioned. So when I got the first email, I was like, oh, I'm going to do this. I'm going to go do this. Cool. And then so the process for that, generally speaking, is three stages. It's either initial scouting or application. So someone found you, or you have to fill out the paperwork. Regardless, you're going to have to fill out the same paperwork, but someone finds you sometimes. I got recommended by someone to apply, my friend Cap. And so once you send in your application, the second process is where they express interest, where they want you to send in either another series of videos, fill out another series of paperwork. And then the third step is where you get, they basically that whole time are building a folder to show a producer. And so once you get the second step, that generally means they have enough content to send in your little deck. And so the third step is where the producer actually says yes. And then generally speaking, you have hopefully 2 weeks, but sometimes it's a little bit less. So I always tell people, once you get past step two, start calling off from work, start hiring who you need to kind of like take over and plan to go. Because like when they need you, that's not, you know, they're not going to wait for you. So yeah, that's what the stage is like. But for me, it's like the moment I enter into something like that, A, I assume I'm going to win, and B, I'm assuming I'm going to get on.
I love that. That's a level of confidence that I have from running track and field. I really heard it, and got to have confidence. So it's like, you know, did you have any other confidence building childhood that helped you now as an entrepreneur?
Did I have anything in my childhood that helped me in these stages?
Yeah, like did you play arts or were you good at, you said music, did you play an instrument?
I was terrible at everything. So I started to play music when I was 13. I started to make music when I was 13. And that's the first thing that I started to get good at. But no, I was always awful at sports. I ended up playing rugby down the line in college and doing amazing. But when I was a kid, I was so terrified of everything. I was a huge mama's boy. And yeah, I was afraid of the world. No, I mean, I would say that looking back, there's influence for my parents that I didn't probably take credit for in the A to B. But now I look back and I'm like, oh yeah, my dad worked for the Grateful Dead for like, you know, around 30 years and was a big entrepreneur startup, you know, business guy with no training, no schooling. And then my mom, when they split up, she kind of like took over for a bit because he went through a downside. So like, she was a single mom for a while and she's a marketer and she was such a hustler. She's always working, always had something lined up. So I definitely got something from them. But for the most part, it was leaving home when I was 17. That choice, like you have the option of thinking this might not work out, but you always have the option of thinking, well, what if it did? And that was like the steps of me becoming who I am today, of like believing in the confident me versus becoming the confident me. So combination of the two.
No, it's definitely grassroots. It's definitely raw bootstrapping it. And a lot of our listeners and viewers can relate to that. And a lot of people now, Cody, are finding themselves starting over yet again after the pandemic. Well, hopefully, as we transition. But, you know, I think that people can take from it and just have to focus on it and just keep going and use all your.
Yeah, I think that I've said it before. I'll never stop saying it. I think people just need to believe in themselves more, whether it's, you know, anxiety and depression and issues like that, or if it's, you know, problems with work or, you know, your creative dream that you've been trying on for so long, but it just hasn't been there. Everything takes time, you know, and some things could be a week away, a month away, a year away. It's just like, trust your journey, believe in yourself. You can work as hard as you need to. Some things suck, but you can get over it. Like, people are struggling.
There's another teacher. Some things suck. Get over it. I love it.
The nicer way that I say that, which is on my website, creativebycody.com, it's one of my main quotes that I live by. It's underneath the thing where it's like, anything you have the chance to do again, do better. So that's like the nicer way of saying that.
All right. Okay, good. We're going to check that out on your website because you're wearing a shirt today too. What's the shirt?
Yeah, absolutely. So my buddy Gary Payton, who does, not Gary Payton, the basketball player, Payton, it's very nichey. He does a lot of the art for Cookies, a major weed brand, and he designed three shirts that we put up on my creativebycody.com site. It's a lot of the stuff that I wear in my YouTube channel. All of my social medias and entertainment are under the same thing. So if you search Created by Cody anywhere, it's probably there. But yeah, they're fun. They're available on my website. He's actually just hired him on to be kind of like the creative director, and he's going to start pumping out a lot more stuff because I don't have time to do this stuff. But yeah, he's awesome. So yeah, that's on the
side. More content. I'm excited to see it and tangible goods that we can wear. So Cody, I want to know, and here's just me being, you know, know, a viewer of your show, and I've been watching it for many, many seasons, and it was really cool to see you and Jeff Parham. Well, now I know you, but before. And I never asked her, why is everybody always yelling in the kitchen? Why is it so intense in there? It's food, right? You guys cook it, putting it out. I'm completely ignorant to the kitchen. I can cook. Tell us why it's so intense.
Well, at the end of the day, working in a restaurant is, it's one of the most dangerous job in terms of opening a business. It's one of the worst return, worse than retail, which has terrible margins in and of itself. And not only that, it is super incumbent on, ingredients that take time and water and electricity and man hours and all sorts of stuff like that. It takes actual life, you know what I mean, in the case of proteins and stuff like that. And the shelf life of stuff doesn't come around often, and the pinpoints of doing stuff great aren't available, they're available scarcely. So to put one dish out in a restaurant, there's so much that goes into that A to B. And that's why people always are like, why is Gordon so angry all the time? And it's like, because he really cares. He's a really nice person off camera because there's less things that can go wrong in a normal situation, whereas there's many more things that can go wrong in a kitchen at all times, constantly. And he's also teaching the next generation. You know, you got to think about ecosystem. It's not just what you can do and do a good job, and that should be important. It's what someone else did so that you can do great things, and what you can do allows the next person to do even more. So why it's so yelly and stressful in a kitchen is because it's important. And generally speaking, that's how kitchens have been ran, since the brigade system was created by the French, which was imaged by French military. Everything is structured. Everything needs to happen a certain way. It's an important job that people should take. You know, it's many things. You're an artist and you're a craftsman, and it's a real ass job where you have to work really hard. The second part to that, outside of just being an important blah blah blah, whatever chefy ecosystem thing I want to put into it, is that it's just really hard to hear. You know, there's hood vents. Yeah, there's just hood vents that are over you that are constantly just like blaring, and there's always stuff happening. There's, you know, chopping and sautéing and frying and boiling water and all sorts of stuff like that. So, you know, commotion of the dining room and servers that won't shut the hell up and all sorts, you know. So there's just, it's easy to be loud, but there's also an importance to it.
Yeah, no, you, now that you break it all down, and that makes sense. Like, yes, copy captain or copy chef.
Heard.
2 minutes. All that makes sense now that you broke it down. And there's timing up. So the food, right? Like the food and the time. Like you guys, how do you try to preserve? I mean, you throw away a lot of food, right? Being a chef.
Depending on where you work. But largely, no. You, in most places, that absolutely can't happen. You get ridiculed. You don't want to do that to it. It would make you feel.
Yeah.
It would make you feel embarrassed. Like personally, and then in terms of your surroundings. A lot of places, what they'll do for trainees and stuff like that is they'll take a trash bag and they'll tie it to your belt loops, and all of your prep for that day, you're not allowed to use a trash can. So all of your prep for that day for your mise, everything that you have to use for trash, you have to put in the bag, and at the end of the day, they'll check it.
What? And you got to load that around.
The heavy thing, but it's more so at the end of the day, it's like, we're going to see what you're wasting.
Very, very
So like there's a good example in LA, Rustic Canyon, Chef Andy, and he does a lot of crazy work with just using parts of vegetables and stuff like that you wouldn't think, like, you know, the mash, like the leftover stuff from their hot sauce, like they'll do other ferments and stuff like that with. They're always trying to like repurpose. So no, largely I would say that you shouldn't waste food. Some places do and can get away with it because of the size and stuff like that, but largely no. It's the objective to minimize that at all costs. Minimize. There we go.
Minimize. No, right. We hear you. And that's good. Now, Cody, you know, for the viewers of Hell's Kitchen season 19, we saw that you had maybe a little chemistry, a little crush on one of the other contestants. Do you want to touch on that? I didn't ask you before, but I just figured I'd ask you on camera.
I was doing some analytics behind it, and I was like, that's the most searched question in Hell's Kitchen history, from what I can tell on Twitter, Reddit, all that stuff, is what's up with Cody and Mary Lou? Yeah, so I would say that in the beginning on that show, for any of you who haven't seen the show, there's a really pretty girl who's amazing at her job. Her name is Mary Lou, and I competed against her on the show Hell's Kitchen. She was just really nice. So like in that show, in the beginning, especially on the team I was on, everyone's just at each other's throats. No one really wants to work together. And I'm like, guys, we're on the same team until we're not. So it's like, until then, why would we try to get along? Yeah, too complex, I guess. but with all that, you know, I always try to push the boundaries in a culinary competition when I'm doing time challenges. I never would cook that in a restaurant, that way in a restaurant. It's just like too, it's unnecessary. So it's like, if you get four ingredients, I want to make sure that I have two different variations of each ingredient. I want hot and cold examples. I want raw and cooked examples, and I wanted pickles something. And so Mary Lou was the first person to would come up to me and be like she'd be like, how'd you do that so quick? And be like, this and that. And like actually be down to like ask questions and chop it up about that. And then we just started playing cards, and she's cute and we had fun. She's awesome. Well, a lot of that stuff is like, you know, that show's tough. It took me a while ego-wise to admit that that was one of the hardest things I've ever done. But it's tough. It's like, generally speaking, 20 hours a day. You don't really get a day off. It's really go, 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 and you just have to constantly be on it. So it's nice to have someone that's just like a real sweetheart at the end of the day to talk to. Love that girl.
And you know, I didn't see any ego there with you, Cody. You did, but you know what? Guys, this is the rule book. This is the play to do it when you're working with a woman that is in charge and you still respect. I could tell you respected her and you respected yourself and the way that you handled it. But, you know, we saw that you perhaps had a crush. So the balance of that, it was pure magic. And that's probably why you're the largest searched what's going on with Mary Lou and Cody question on everything. I mean, you really handled it. I'd like to see a spinoff. So will there be a cooking spinoff with the in the kitchen with Cody and Mary Lou, perhaps down the.
Yeah, we've been talking about stuff like that. I might be seeing her soon, so yeah, definitely something in the future. We both have YouTube channels, so it would be super smart. And you know, we get along really well, and so it's kind of one of those situations where it's like, all right, find me a reason why we shouldn't.
Yeah, none. The people want it. You heard it here on the Startup with Monique LeRae, guys. Make sure you comment down below if you want to see a cooking segment with Mary Lou and Cody. We're going to try to get that going, get that petition.
That's so fun. You're the first person who's asked me if we're going to start a segment together. So well done. That's the first time there.
I thought I'd heard what I do, Cody.
Interesting for me with that is people were like, I was so surprised that you were so supportive of her at the end. And I was like, why? Why wouldn't I be? It's like that would be you'd seem like a spoiled little kid if you got to the end of it and you're like, wham, I don't want to kind of a thing. It's like you should be really proud to be on anyone's team at that point.
Sure. And there's enough to go around. There's enough success. What's meant for you is meant for you.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And it's like, yeah, push other people forward and that momentum will help you. Like
there you go. Well, Cody, I'm so glad you carved out some time on your Sunday to chat with me. I've got a fireplace going, and I wish you had some marshmallows or something.
I know. It's so cute. I love that.
Thank you. It's going to be inappropriate in about a week. It's going to get warm here. But why don't you tell everybody where they can find you? And we got a couple more minutes. What's up next that we can look out for in your world, in Cody's world?
Yeah. So thanks for tuning in, and thanks for having me, first of all. My label that I've been trying to push and will continue to build is Created by Cody. I'm going to go back to restaurants full time at some point, but for the time being, and I'll be doing pop-ups and stuff like that, A to B. But for the time being, I want to build a home in content creation. I want to make myself more accessible to networks because I love competitions. I have a particular vision for where I think I could help the competition industry in a way, a couple different sneaky ways to do that. So for the time being, I want to A, make myself more accessible to the networks, and B, start building my own. So I've started a YouTube channel called Created by Cody. I have some plans to get into Twitch with another live stream show. And then I have a really, really fun TV show that I'm working on with my friend Josh Payne, who's a tattooer, called Knives and Needles, where basically it's an interview platform where you get to choose, you know, your interview format, whether you want to learn something in the kitchen or get tattooed. But the ultimate question that we want to ask people, which is super important to me, is what made you almost quit? And then what helped you choose not to? Because the question that me and Josh, who's a very successful tattooer, he's been on Ink Master a multitude of times. The question that we love when we look eye to eye all the time is, you know, like, we worked really hard. We weren't necessarily like given anything or destined to be anything. Like, you know, we took something that we weren't good at and then we got good at something and now we're here. And we want to eliminate this ethereal aspect that people have with their idols or people they look up to, where they're like, oh, look, they're a rock star, or they're, you know, they're talented, or they're this. And it's like, all those words are just this barrier or make it seem like that's something that they have that I don't. And that's terrible. I want people to realize how powerful they are. So yes, content creation is my home. I'm going to get a pop-up tour where I'll be cooking, where people can actually come see me. But that's who I am and what I'm doing for the time being.
I love that. And, you know, on your pop-up tour, we'll have to get you some bottles of Michael Solberg Family Wines.
Oh, is that what you're thinking?
Yes. This is one of my wine partners, Michael Solberg. We're going to get you some. What are you cooking with these days? You put a little Chardonnay in there, a little rosé?
For me, it's more so the color that fits the situation. For white wines, it's like I don't want to use anything that's too sweet. But yeah. I like cooking with beer often. But yeah, beer, white wine, or rosé is generally my go-tos.
We'll get you some. And thank you so much, Cody. I can't wait to have you back on. I'm actually going to try to get you on a new app that I'm working with called Symposium, where people can book you and you can cook and teach them.
So. Oh, cool. Yeah. So one thing I'm also trying to start doing is I've done a couple already, is start to do live cooking classes. There's a few platforms that I can do it on where I can do like super small ticket prices, like even $5. And super fun. I'm trying to tap into my real nerdy stuff. Like, you're going to come, you're going to learn how to repeat a recipe for sure, like most places do, but you're going to leave with a skill. You're going to leave with a new technique that's going to help you like set up your root system to start getting better as a cook. So they've been really fun, and I can't wait to do more.
You know what? Yeah. We're going to connect you with symposium.us and put you on. And I actually am going to learn how to cook meatloaf. So I will pay for your class to learn, because I fuck up meatloaf every time I try to do it.
Oh, it's easy. I can tell you to do that. That's an easy technique thing that people don't think about.
Okay. Right. Yeah, I'm learning from the best. So I'm excited.
Yeah, you can make it in a dough mixer. It's not like, so like with burgers, you don't really want to agitate it too much, because you'll still get that steak-like texture when you bite into it. But with meatloaf, you want, it's like in between like a mortadella, where it's like you really want to beat it up, because that's just going to make all of those all the protein basically start to stick together. And so that's what's going to help you make this kind of like more dense product that's going to give you actually that meatloaf situation. So I would season the hell out of it and put it in a stand mixer if you have one, and just let it rock and just let it just continuously mix. And you'll see it'll come together like a dough. It'll come together in a ball. That's how you know it's ready. But anyways, yeah. Yeah. Well, hey, we could talk more. I can't wait to come back on the show. Thanks for having me. And
you're
have my contact information now. You can always hit me up if you have questions.
We're going to have you back in the studio. Maybe you can bring some of your creations by Cody by the studio.
Love that.
All right, Cody, have a beautiful Sunday. Thank you so much.
Hey, it's my absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me. Until next time.
You're welcome. Till next time. All right, you guys, that was created by Cody from Hell's Kitchen, season 19. Can you believe we had him on the show? That's awesome. So he's going to keep us posted on where we can find him. If you want to get some cooking classes with him, we're going to set that up. I think that it's going to be an amazing thing to see. And he's so down to earth, right, guys? We have some awesome people on the show. Shout out to Alicia Antonio and Sean Antonio out there, and Chef Corey, the winner. Shout out to you guys. Thank you so much. Again, Michael Solberg Family Wines, thank you so much for your continued partnership and love and support. And we just love that rosé. Now, guys, I know this rosé looks very feminine, right? Very pink, but it's actually a brose. So you can drink this with a steak or the meatloaf that Cody was teaching me how to make just now. So cheers, okay? Here's to Cody and all the Hell's Kitchen contestants. All right. MichaelSolbergFamilyWines.com. All right. And next, you guys, we're going to shift gears here. We're going to leave the kitchen and we're going to go into the beauty chair. A lot of us need a haircut. A lot of us need facials. I finally got my first facial in a whole over a year and manicure. And so right now, coming up next, we have Tanya from Strands Unlimited. Tanya, how are you? Yes. How's it going?
I am doing well. How are you?
I'm doing great, but you're doing spectacularly. I mean, you guys, Tanya is a badass. Like, I met you, online, and ever since I met you, you're just skyrocketing. I mean, introduce yourself to everybody, and then we'll share the good news, okay?
Well, my name is Tanya Fairley, and I am the founder, CEO of Strands Unlimited, which is a natural, vegan hair care line for textured hair. And when I say textured, curly, wavy, swavy hair, I also own Strands Hair Studio and Strands. Oh my God, how did I go blank that fast, right?
You're an entrepreneur and you've got all these.
I got so much.
Strands Unlimited, salons, you know.
Hi.
Yes.
Strands Unlimited Beauty Supply. We opened up almost less than a year ago during the pandemic. And in about 90 days, we'll open up Strands Unlimited Beauty Supply number 2. You're the first to hear that out in public.
Wow. So- it's another startup exclusive, you guys. I love it. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm so excited. I've been looking forward to this all week. I was like, oh, I get
to. You're welcome. No, and you know, and I love the energy here because, you know, we touched on it, you know, a couple shows back, and we're talking about people who really have been struggling through this time, and we want to try to help support and give them shows with entrepreneurs that are pushing through. And you happen to be one of them that is actually magnifying her business and blowing it up. Maybe you could offer some tips on and how that is. I mean, every business structure is different, every industry is different, supply and demand for those, but how are you able to kind of prosper and grow in this time?
You know, I find that with a lot of things that happened during the pandemic is that people weren't really being honest with themselves. Businesses weren't really being honest with themselves. And a lot of us have so much emotional attachment to our babies. We've birthed these, right? So for me, it was having that reality check, like my industry was forever changed. We were one of the actual hardest hit outside of restaurants. We were actually one of the hardest hit in the beauty industry for shutdowns. So it was just very important that I just kind of listened and followed and saw what was going on, but was ready to pivot. And man, when I pivoted this time, it paid off big time. I mean, we were able to launch our hair care line online within a matter of a week. Our sales increased by 3,000%. Wow. And then as that was going on, you know, at the time I had 2 hair salons. I had a hair loss center, and this was before the beauty supply came along. And so, and one of my hair salons was in a very high rent area. And I knew that as much as I wanted to hold on to it, that I had to be realistic about what I wanted to do. So after some brainstorming, crying, and just really thinking about what I wanted to do, all I kept hearing, and I pray a lot, and all I kept hearing was pivot, but don't stop. And so I shifted. You know, I had my clients come from one area to the other. And then when I had them move, they were like, how come you hadn't had us here before? I was like, what?
Well, you know, it sounds like you did listen to that inner guidance. And at an early age, a lot of people have been taught to not listen to that inner guidance and to listen to others. And you have to do that until you're 18. But when you own a business and you're older, you can listen to it. And yes, usually it leads you down the right path. I listen to it and I have this show. I mean, you know, thank goodness I have this show, and it's a platform for people like yourself that could come on during a pandemic. And yes, I get a jazz out of that. I love that. So tell us how you got into the cosmetology space, the beauty space, and specifically, you know, black hair care or wavy hair care products.
So I actually started doing hair in high school. I was cutting hair since before I turned 18. And even after high school, I was raised in a foster home. So you know how that goes. When you're in a foster home, by the time you turn 18, well, by the time you turn 17 and a half, you have to start deciding what you want to do. And I had to take a job in corporate America, and I still did hair on the side. So fast forward, I was second marriage, and I was miserable working in corporate America. And I just told my husband at the time, I said, look, I hate what I'm doing. I was doing hair on the side, and I said, I want to pursue this full time, and I know I can make it work. Little did I know, in the back of his mind, he was scared. He was thinking we were going to be like eating poor food for the rest of our lives because he didn't understand how the industry worked. So I went back to school, finished up my licensing, and I would say about 8 months into realizing, okay, the first month I kid you not, me doing hair, I made
$312. Oh, that first drop in the bucket, huh?
and that was me walking away. When I walked away from corporate America, I was almost six figures. I was a few thousand dollars away from six figures. So here he's looking at this like, what is she doing?
Yeah, but I know. That was
motivation for me to say, oh no, I can't do this. And so every month I increased. By my eighth month, I was on target to being a six-figure stylist. Eight months after being in a salon. So as time went on, I discovered my niche. I started out in a multicultural salon, but my clients that gravitated to me, although they were multicultural, they all had something in common. They all had textured hair. So I had Jewish clients with curly hair. I had Chinese clients with curly hair, and it just became my thing and my niche. And so there's a popular product that was online that was very popular amongst all curly hair and wavy hair people. And it got to a point where it wasn't working as well. And one day one of my clients goes, when are you going to come out with your own product? Because they know I'm not afraid to try anything. And I would mix different products together. And then I was like, I just kind of like left that in the back of my head. But then that desire, that nudge, that voice in the back kept saying, it's time. It's time. So in 2017, I went to work. 2018, we were able to, for the whole year of almost 2018, early 2019, test out all of our formulas on our clients, got real-time feedback, and we launched our hair care line in 2019 for curly hair. And I kid you not, it's been a life changer. It's sulfate, silicone, paraben-free, vegan-friendly, gluten-free. And someone asked me, Tanya, why gluten-free? Because most people with ethnic backgrounds have a sensitivity to small things. Some people have dairy, but a lot of people have sensitivities to wheat and they don't realize that that's in their hair products. So because I've been behind the chair for so long, I was like, okay, this is how I want my product. I was so amazed at the feedback, and the chemist I found was a Black chemist.
Beautiful.
Manufactured in the USA.
Wow, even better.
Even better. Until the pandemic hit, and then we couldn't get our bottles because as much as we have it manufactured in the USA, there's still some stuff we have no control over.
They're in Kansas and you need them in Crenshaw. It's not what's going on.
So for the most part, but that motivation and drive came from my background of you know, being raised in a foster home and knowing that I always had to make a way and just keep going and keep going and just never giving up. I've had every reason in life to give up. I mean, there's so many different obstacles that have come. But just being able to pivot and not give up.
And, you know, you really hit on something I can relate to, you know, working in reality TV and working for a few major networks. I was on the path to, you know, you hit the glass ceiling. I had someone, I won't name his name. He's very famous. But he was hiring me for a job. And he said, oh, you know, you can't put any more on your resume. I mean, we see that you're established, but you know, you're getting up there in age. Oh. And I was like, wow. Okay. And that was one of the times where I was like, you know what? I'm going to do it my way and it's going to be hard and I'm going to eat chopped ramen and my nails aren't going to be cute and my hair is going to be, you know, in the same wig for a while, but it's starting to pay off. And just that little glimmer of hope, keeps you going. Right. I mean,
it does.
You're on track. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
It was just going to say, it just makes so big of a difference when you're doing it for, I started out doing it for my clients, but then for myself, it was, I did this because my heart was pure and I wanted to make a difference in somebody's life. And for my somebody, it was their hair. It was how they felt about it. It's how they saw themselves. And then just recently, as you know, we placed second place in the Black Girl Ventures Afro Sheen pitch, right?
Congratulations.
But the amazing part about that was we were the only hair care company that placed. The top winner was an app. This lady created an app, which is an amazing app. I'm actually getting on her platform. And then the number three was a lady, her and her daughter, Gabby Bowes. They have barrettes. And so as a hair care line, we were the only ones. And you talk about a boost of confidence and just feeling like, here this little kid from Pasadena, from a foster home who had nothing growing up, has really started to make a difference. And I feel it. Not just see, but I actually feel it. So it's been amazing.
And you know, that's going to give a lot of people hope. And like, even if you are starting back up after this pandemic has wiped out all your work for the last decade, because one of my platforms, one of the things I was working on, it got kind of shelved, if we can say shelved. And but that's okay. You know, and you pivot and you focus on other things, but that gives people confidence that if you can do it from a foster perspective. Yep. Shout out to Casa LA, by the way. We did the Foster Your Dreams night with them recently. Awesome. Thank you for sponsorship, everyone. Michael Solberg and all the other brands. Yes. And so getting back to you, I think that's confidence that people will need to hear. And so speaking of another thing that you just accomplished that is humongous and following your dreams and coming from, they say, starting from the bottom, now you're here. Do you want to make an announcement to my listeners and viewers for what you've just achieved with Strands Unlimited?
Which one? Which announcement?
I know so much stuff. Can we talk about the state?
Yes. Yes. I just want to make sure we're on the right page.
Okay.
Man. Well, yes, I am now an official board member for the State of California Cosmetology and Barbering Board. You talking about huge.
Wow. I need a noise machine, guys. Who makes noise machines? Okay. Make me one. Woo! Or like confetti. Yeah.
Some people were like, I look back on 2020 and 2021 as just allowing myself the freedom to pursue the things that will bring me joy, not because I'm doing anything just for myself, but because I'm making a difference for other people. And being a part of this was something that I had kept seeing and kept thinking and hearing. And it was like, you know, we complain about things not being the way we want, but when you don't take the action to be a part of the solution, then you're just complaining. And even in my life, how I grew up, I wouldn't change it for anything, right? I mean, I was homeless. I was physically abused. I was mentally abused. I was given up. I have less than 7% hearing in my left ear. And this was all before getting into a foster home. So this was at the hands of my birth mother. So to have this experience, and then I can say that I've just been elected to the state board. I mean, it was like, it took a minute for me to like, girl, you did that. Like, yeah, you did that.
You did that, Tanya. And I am so, so sorry to hear about those things that happened. And I agree with you that, you know, the not wanting to change it, even though it was painful to go through, we've all been through some things and now you're here. All those pebbles along your path are attributing to where you are now, to where you've landed. And I'm elated for you. Like, this is huge. I don't think people understand how huge this is. I mean, you left your corporate job and you're now on the board of the state of California. What does that mean for someone that just doesn't understand? Point that out for us.
Wow. So, okay, let me just be honest. Like, I wasn't sure like how significant it was until I got the call from the office. And I'm just like, oh yeah, like I've been to a board meeting. I've been on boards before. And she was like, no, Tanya, you have to have a Senate hearing and you have to be, you have to be sworn in. I was like, huh? What?
Background like, checks. What is any Duns and Bradstreet number? It's like going to the military, right?
Everything. They left no stone unturned. References. They didn't want family references because they probably already did the background checks on that. But just the idea that I felt confident enough to step forward, knowing what they were going to do, to say, hey, go for it. I'm ready. So the significance of this, I'll be a change maker. You know, I'll be a part of the industry that regulates what I do, you know? So, I mean, that's huge. I'm not on the sidelines anymore, sitting back saying, oh, the board didn't do this or the board didn't that. Well, guess what, Tanya? Now you're part of that board.
Well, I'm so glad I have someone in my Rolodex now to call that's on the board. But the vegan version of your brand, I'm so excited to use it. I'm actually in the process of doing my hair a different way, and I will be using strands. Guys, I'll be taking a photo of it with strands. And my niece, I'm going to get my niece to wear it too. You saw her picture. She's got a lot of curls.
Yes.
Like yes. So that would be great. And, you know, the vegan portion of your product is what really is great, because people, you got to understand your skin, your scalp, your body. And I'm not here to preach about being vegan. I'm by no means all the way there, but you know, I'm doing my thing. It seeps into your bloodstream.
Yep.
Through your skin's your largest organ. So why go vegan? Why try to have the cleanest products? Because it all seeps in, right? I mean, you know better than I do.
Yeah. And you know, one of the things that the reason why it was important to me for the vegan part was because I have like I said, my clientele is very diverse. I have 10%, I have 10% Black regular clients and 90% other, and they all come from different backgrounds. Yes. And so what I found was that when I was really looking at a product that was vegan, it was more for the care of the animals, right? But even something as simple as honey, the first go around that came out had honey in it. And we had to scream that. Because I told my chemist, I said, this honey, it's from a bee. That's not vegan. So we had to scrap a whole production of product because of that. But what people don't realize that you have all these sensitivities and allergies. And if you have a sensitivity to a fruit or a vegetable, people check your hair products, because guess what? Hair products are made with all kinds of fruits and vegetables all day long. And so if you have a sensitivity already, check to see if your hair product has it in it. And that may be a reason why it's contributing to some of your hair loss. I also have a hair loss center, because that's my thing is helping people either retain or regain what they've already lost. And I know that I'm giving them a product that's not contributing to hair loss, to sensitivities, to scalp issues, or anything.
Everybody's winning. The animals can keep their lives, and you can keep your edges.
Yeah.
That's a win-win. Okay. All right. So can you hold up one of the containers, Tanya, so people can see the beautiful purple package if you're a Prince fan. If anybody loves Prince, he would be proud of this packaging, I think.
Yes. I love it. Love it. And
oh my God.
Online, we're definitely online at www.strandswithazunlimited.com. And it lists the information, the ingredients on the product is there. And if you have any questions, I'm actually the one that directly helps everyone when they call in about questions about our product.
Wow. So she's on the board. She's saving hair losses and bees, and she can also take your call. So I need to get the coffee that you're drinking. I have a coffee startup, and it's not even that strong. All right. Tanya, thank you so much for being here, and you're going to have to come back when we're back in the studio.
Yes.
So we can your test and play with it. And we've got some exciting things coming up in the next few months together, and we'll be announcing that later. Where can people find you on social media?
You can find me at www.tanyafairley.com. And www.strandswithazunlimited.com. And we're on Instagram under both names, Tanya Fairley and Strands Beauty. Strands Unlimited, I'm sorry. But yes, please look us up, follow us, engage with us. We're more than happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Oh, Tanya, it's a pleasure. Congratulations. Keep going. I can't wait. I know I'm going to turn my TV on and see you on Wendy Williams or something. So that's awesome.
Oh, no.
All right, guys. Thank you so much, Tanya. And I want to do a real quick announcement before we go. And guys, thank you so much for everybody that came on today. So listen, I'm still doing the pandemic film. It's the international version of the film. So I'll be out of the country here in the next 72 hours. We're going to Kingston, Jamaica. And we're going to look for those stories. So if you know anyone in that area that has a pandemic story, an entrepreneur, email us at capaquariusmedia@gmail.com. And thank you for being here, you guys. And check out these brands, these amazing entrepreneurs. And until next time, what will you start up today? I'll see you next weekend. Bye.
You're listening to The Startup with Monique Leray, only on LA Talk Radio.